Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 118. Today, the amateur traveler goes to London, England. Learn about great walks, where you can get an inexpensive dinner, and where else you can shop besides Harrods. Welcome to the amateur traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Heading home, but maybe not today. I have two news stories for you today, and the first one involves Heathrow Airport. Since we're talking about London today, Heathrow's new Terminal 5 is getting the world's first personal rapid transit system. It's a little set of tiny pods rather than train cars that will take business travelers around the terminal. The individual pods travel 25 miles per hour, taking people between their cars and the terminal check-in, and the airport claims there'll never be more than an 18-second wait in between one pod and the next. Take a look at the pictures for that at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. And the second story I've been saving for a little while, it's an article from Smarter Travel written by Ed Perkins about the new Open Skies Agreement. It's his analysis of that new treaty, which allows airlines in Europe and America to fly unrestricted between the two areas, provided they can get space at airports. His prediction is that it won't actually lower most of the prices between the US and Europe. It'll be interesting to see if that's true, but he does think that, based on what we're seeing now, that instead of just four airlines flying back and forth, for instance, between Heathrow and the United States, American, United, British Airways, and Virgin, there will be at least three others that seem to be able to get spaces in Heathrow. And the jury is still out what's going to happen when this takes place in March. But if you're interested in the analysis from Smarter Travel, check out the links for that article also in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. Before we get started in this week's interview, I should let you know that this interview was made with an international call, and the sound quality is not quite up to the usual standards, but I did think the content was good enough to include this interview in the show. But if the sound quality is going to bother you, you may just want to skip this episode and come back next week when we have a better sound quality interview about Tahiti. With no further apologies, here's the interview. I'd like to welcome to the show David St. Vincent, who is coming to us to talk about London. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Now, David, your website is Soho Scribbler, so I'm assuming you are in Soho.
Yes, I live in the heart of Soho, actually, on the main drag, Old Compton Street, which is pretty lively and pretty fun.
All right. So if we have somebody who is going to go to London, London is obviously a huge destination and hard to cover just in one interview. And let's say somebody only has a week. Where would you recommend they focus?
Well, definitely come to Soho because that's the heart of London. It's where the centre of the nightlife and theatre and cinema and bars and nightclubs is. But I would also try and take some time out to go somewhere a little bit quieter, like Greenwich, for example, which is in the southeast of London. It's famous for the Millennium Dome, which was a bit of a disaster, but around there you've got wonderful countryside and you've got fantastic views over London. And if you can take a boat from Westminster Pier in the centre of London to Greenwich, you get a free guided tour thrown in and you find all these wonderful pubs along the way. Right on the coast, actually, it feels very maritime, and Greenwich is a World Heritage Site. I'd just suggest going anywhere that's not in the guidebooks, really.
When you say it's a World Heritage Site, not just the observatory where Greenwich Mean Time is, but the whole village?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
The observatory is the one place that gets absolutely packed. So it's understandable because people like to be photographed standing on the Meridian Line. But there's much more to it than that. There's the Queen's House. It used to be a Royal Summer Capital. And you've got the world's only fan museum. And you've got a beautiful market. It feels like being in the countryside, although it's actually in London. And that's amazing.
Okay.
And you can walk along the shore, and you can even see a tiny little beach with lots of discarded bottles on it. It's a beautiful place.
When you have friends come to London who've never been there, what's the first place you take them to see?
The first place they want to go to is either Leicester Square or Oxford Street, or maybe Harrods. And I say, don't go there because they're just overcrowded and just tourist traps. When I do bring visitors here, I take them to Chinatown, or maybe to Greenwich. Camden Market, although that's quite crowded too.
I enjoyed Camden Market.
Camden Market is great, yeah. Especially if you go there when it's not too busy, which is not every day.
I think I ended up there after walking one of the canals, after walking the Regent's Canal that ends at the Camden Locks.
That's the one, yeah. If you walk along that canal, that is great. You do feel that you've got the place to yourself, actually.
Uh-huh.
And you think, every house you walk along that canal, you think, I want that house. But you'd be paying a lot of money.
You've read some of the guidebooks for London, or your friends have who've come to visit you. What do you think they recommend? You mentioned Leicester Square, Oxford Street, Harrods. What do you think they recommend that's not worth the time?
All those places, actually. Oxford Street, Leicester Square, Harrods. Go to New Bond Street, and you can find all the top designer labels in the world, and you maybe bump into Madonna or Victoria Beckham or, you know, the whole England football squad. Or where else is good for shopping? Soho is great, actually. If you walk along Berwick Street, for example, which is by the market, there's some wonderful independent shops selling the latest stuff that DJs want to play on vinyl. Greenwich Market is great. Covent Garden Market is great if you want to buy handicrafts, you know, Chinese calligraphy, anything quite quirky.
Leicester Square, a number of people are going there to get tickets for the theatre.
Yes.
I'm assuming that that's still the best place if you're looking for inexpensive tickets to London's wonderful theatre.
That's right, actually, yeah. You can get half-price tickets on the same day.
Okay.
But there are two or three shops on the same square that look like they're the official one, and the real one just says TKTS, and it's a little booth on the south of Leicester Square. Actually, for shopping, I would also suggest Cheshire Street, Brick Lane, and Columbia Market, all in E2.
If I come to London the first time, what do you think is the biggest surprise for me?
The biggest surprise, I think, even as an American, which is a land of immigrants, is how diverse this place is, actually. I think London is officially more diverse than New York in terms of the number of people from different nationalities, races, and languages and religions.
I was thinking about that when you mentioned Camden Market, because I think that's one of the places that it becomes pretty obvious pretty quick.
Where I live, you can walk down the street with a teapot on your hair and nobody will really look at you.
Does that happen often?
I don't often walk down the street with a teapot on my head, no, but I often see people walking down the street dressed in the most outrageous costumes and nobody really blinks an eyelid.
Huh. Interesting. History. London is obviously steeped in it.
It has a bit of history, yeah.
Obviously, people tend to go to the Tower. They tend to go to the Parliament buildings. What do you think they miss, though? What thing is hidden away that most of the tourists don't discover?
They tend to stick to the places that are in all the guidebooks. They don't give themselves the chance to get lost in the back streets.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who comes to London should just have the time just to walk around off the main street and explore some wonderful architecture. I'd say even in the centre of London, even in Soho, you can just walk off the main streets, go down and explore some mews or alleyway and find the most amazing architecture. And look up, don't look down, look up, and you'll see amazing architectural details that you wouldn't find otherwise.
Any particular place where you think that's the best place for architecture watching, as it were?
I personally am a big fan of Georgian architecture. I would say Soho, St. James's, Mayfair, Westminster, the East End as well, actually. Clerkenwell, Shoreditch, those areas are great for architecture.
Okay, so Georgian, we're talking about the typical four stories tall, the servants' quarters are on the top floor, so they're the small windows, and the great big entryway and parlor are on the bottom story.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But often you find the detail is right at the top of the building, actually. You don't notice it if you just walk along quickly, going from one attraction to the other.
I recall we stayed in a small hotel up by Paddington Station. Inexpensive hotel, Georgian building. Of course, the problem was that all of the Georgian buildings, the reason why the servants were on the top floor was there were no elevators, and these people hadn't put one in. So you save a little money by staying in some place where you have to cart your bags up to the fourth floor. But
if you want to buy or rent a flat in London, actually, often you can live in quite a good area if you're prepared to live on the top floor, because you have to walk all the way up to the top.
Now, London, especially for someone like me coming from the U.S., can be very expensive these days. Obviously, the dollar, I believe, is not actually worth anything. I don't believe it's a real currency anymore. Are there any are there any tips for saving money going to London?
You're right, the dollar is not particularly strong at the moment. But there are loads of free attractions in London, actually. Most of the museums are free, even really world-famous ones like the British Museum and the National Gallery. Walking around the place is not that expensive, actually. The most expensive attractions are often not worth it, like Madame Tussauds, for example. I mean, what's the point in going there to see a waxwork of someone you've seen on television and standing next to it? You know, for hell's sake, and what's the point of that? You can eat out quite cheaply as well. If you go somewhere like Chinatown, especially Lyall Street, you can get a really good meal for about $10. If you know where you're going, it's not expensive. Now, I live right in the centre, and I don't spend that much. It's just a question of looking around to find the bargains. If you go shopping at a market, for example, you can find some incredible bargains. The transport can be quite cheap, actually. If you get an Oyster card or you get a travel card, for example,
right.
I mean, you've got more or less unlimited travel for 3 days.
And the Oyster card, is it good for the buses as well as the underground, as I recall?
It's good for the buses and the underground. It's not yet good for the trains, but that's going to come quite soon, I think. And also in London, you don't have to tip as much as you do in America. I mean, in America, I believe, you go to a restaurant and the maitre d' expects you to give a tip when you enter the place. You don't have any of that in London. At the end of the meal, if you think the meal was worth it, you can give, say, 10% tip. And in America, it's a lot more than that.
Right.
If you want to stay here cheaply, there are some accommodation agencies. There's one on my street called Outlet where you can rent somebody's flat for, well, a lot less than you'd pay in a hotel anyway.
Yeah, the first time, actually, my wife and I went to London with our small son, we rented a flat up by Regent's Park. And not only did we get a less expensive accommodation, but the people who owned the flat lived in the same building, had us over for tea, and then also told us little secrets, like they were doing the Trooping of the Color, they were doing the rehearsal for that, and we wouldn't have known anything about it if we hadn't stayed with them and learned from them. And just for those of you who are listening, the Trooping of the Color is, after you've seen that, the changing of the guard seems just a trivial little thing because it's all of the different regiments marching down pell-mell. And the difference between what we saw and the real one was the Queen wasn't there, but everyone else was there for the official celebration of the Queen's birthday, which is several months after her actual birthday when the weather's nicer in May or June, I think.
Was there a Queen substitute then?
I think there was. I'm trying to remember. There was the Queen's coach, but the Queen wasn't in it because we just saw the rehearsal. And if we had stayed another week or if we had been there a week later, we could have seen the real festival. But when we went and see the changing of the guard after that, it was just crowds of tourists and was very much anticlimactic after seeing the Trooping of the Color. As an American, we obviously don't have the same sort of pageantry, I think. And so I'm sure that there are not as many Englishmen at the changing of the guard or something like that as there are American tourists, because it's something that's very different for us.
I think that's true, actually. If you live in London, then you get a bit blasé about everything. I can't remember the last time I went to visit the British Museum, except when I've had visitors coming here, then it's a joy to go and see these places. But yeah, of course, the pageantry is something special about London.
Museums, let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously, the British Museum, the Rosetta Stone, and some of the things that can be found there. Your best small museum that people don't know about?
There's a wonderful fan museum in Greenwich. It's got an amazing collection of fans from about 1700, I think. And it's the only one in the world.
A fan
and it's
museum?
Just so cute. Yeah, fans, you know, things that you use to cool yourself down in hot weather. In the world, so you could only find it in London. That's a great thing.
In the greater London area, let's just say any place I can get on the underground, any good place for a day trip?
Around the Thames Barrier, actually, which is going to be the Olympic site, it's around the Lee Valley.
Okay.
It's pretty much unspoilt, actually. You know, you're on the edge of London and you've got the most beautiful countryside, and it's going to be developed soon to be the Olympic site. And it'd be great to have been there before it's developed, actually, I think.
Now, as I recall, it's a little upriver from London?
It's a bit upriver, yeah. Okay. You have some magnificent walks along the Thames and you won't see anybody else.
Okay. How about further afield? Getting on a train at Paddington or Victoria Station or one of the other train stations, where would you recommend for a day trip? Where do you go?
Oh, Brighton.
Brighton, okay, all right.
Especially in summer. I mean, this time of year, it's a little bit nippy. But in summer, it's the most wonderful place. It's like Soho in London, which is very diverse and very colourful. But on the seaside, it's so small, you can walk anywhere you want to. And it's got the most amazing nightlife and bars and restaurants and so on. And wonderful shops. I remember the first time I went there, because I was a school near there, about 20 years ago, they had the first vegetarian shoe shop in the country.
A vegetarian shoe shop,
yeah. And now there are like 20 vegetarian shoe shops there. It's just the most bizarre, cosmopolitan, bohemian place you can think of.
And I'm assuming these are shoes made out of synthetic materials, not actually made out of vegetables.
I never actually investigated. I think they're probably made out of one or the other. Yeah, maybe vegetables, I'm not sure. Bananas, I don't know. Bananas. Leaves, I don't know. You've got the Royal Pavilion in Brighton, which is most amazingly eccentric. The folly by the Prince Regent is. He had an interest in Oriental architecture. He brought back this vision of it to Brighton. It's a total fantasy, but there's nothing quite like it anywhere in Europe. It's just extraordinary.
And this was Edward when he was Prince Regent?
No, this wasn't. This was George the Fourth, when his father was King George the Third, but he was called the Mad, Mad George. But
got it. I was too late in my history there. Okay,
a little bit, yeah, but not that much.
What else should we know before we go to London? As we wrap this up, the other thing that people should remember before you go.
I think people in Britain, people in London, can appear to be quite reserved, but we're actually very friendly when you get to know us. When you've broken the ice. You know, just walk up to us in a pub and say hello. And we're generally quite friendly people, but we don't tend to talk to strangers very much. You sometimes have to make an effort to break the ice.
We found having a 17-month-old baby broke the ice really quick.
I think that either that or having a dog.
Yeah, that or having a dog. That's always recommended, or, yep.
Or you can always offer somebody a beer. That always goes down well.
Okay. Any favorite resources for planning a trip to London?
I'm biased because I used to work there, but visitlondon.com is very good. Very good, especially if you want to get off the beaten track, because it covers almost any part of London you can think of, and you've got a few podcasts that you can download for walking tours of places like Greenwich and Dulwich and so on. And it's got a fantastic interactive map that you can use.
Okay. We talked about a couple of walking tours there. You mentioned Greenwich, and I mentioned the Regent's Canal. Any good guided walking tours you would recommend?
Yes, there's some on Visit London. There are some I'm going to be making myself, actually, soon, but I can't give you the website because it's not actually up yet. But no, try visitlondon.com. There are quite a few there.
Okay.
You'll find my transcription there on the website.
Well, unless you have any last thoughts to offer us?
Especially for Americans, they should travel more, actually. And London is a relatively safe place to go to. And the great thing about London is you've got some cultural heritage in common, but you also have the whole world here. So you've got the best of both worlds. It's not like traveling to North Korea or Cuba or Iraq or something like that. But you probably will find people from all those places here. London is a place where nobody really cares where you come from. You're just welcome.
David, thank you very much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about London.
Thank you.
One of the things I enjoy about doing interviews on this show is that even for someplace where I've been, like London, it's always interesting to get someone else's perspective on that. Obviously, I could bring on 100 guests and we'd have 100 different things to do in London because there are so many things to do. Some of the things that I've enjoyed there are the Tower Tour, the big bus overview of the city, the Imperial War Museum, and also the Cabinet War Rooms Museum, just a little tiny view of the war rooms underneath Parliament where the British ran their operations from World War II. I only have one internet resource for you today, and that is, along with the theme of this show, a series of London photographs from urban75.org. I'll put the direct URL in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com, but it's an interesting view of London over 600 photographs. I've been saving this for doing a show on London. In news from the community, welcome to any of you who saw the show on the top page of the podcast area of Apple's iTunes, and thanks again for them for featuring the show for, I think, the fifth time. And I got some feedback from Stephanie finally about the change to the intro. I made a change to make the intro shorter, but I do talk over the theme song, which some of you like and some of you don't. And I've only gotten one piece of feedback so far from Stephanie, who hates the new intro. So let me know what you think. Should I switch back? I had a question from a listener about the Syria-Jordan show, and there's no particular name here, so the listener is apparently anonymous. One question that was not addressed on the Syria podcast: was it safe or allowed for Jewish people to travel to Arab countries? For instance, my parents, before the Intifada, went to Egypt, Jordan, and Israel. When I went to Israel a couple of years ago, I was advised not to go into the Arabic country once my passport was stamped in Israel. As an aside, I once had trouble returning to the United States from Canada because my passport had the Israel info on it. The Border Patrol asked me what the funny Arab writing was, and I politely told them it was Hebrew. I'd been in Israel with a synagogue group. I did write back to our listener, but one thing that people might want to know is, if you are planning on visiting Israel and you don't want to have any sort of problems if you go to an Arab country after that, you can, I am told, tell the Israeli officials that, and they would not stamp your passport. They would stamp it on a separate piece of paper. At least that's the information I've heard from people who have traveled there. And speaking of London, I have mentioned this on the show before, but I got a letter from Sean this week, who was our guest, talking about Sweden, and he said, in preparation for a Christmas trip through London and Bavaria, I was watching a Rick Steves London DVD about 2 weeks ago and thought, sure, I had seen you up in St. Paul's Cathedral, checking the date of the filming, 2000, and said, no way, what are the chances? And then proceeded to let it go. Then I hear the latest Rick Steves podcast and hear your contribution and realize I was right as well, as I remember just how small the world is. Who would have thought that 7 years ago both of you would have had such successful travel podcasts? Like we would even have known what a podcast was back then. Still shaking my head about all of this, how ironic and funny. Keep up the good work. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Yes, Sean, that was in fact me in the Rick Steves Royal London. We ran into Rick Steves, who I do enjoy his work, his podcast, as well as his book, and ran into him in St. Paul's Cathedral in the Whispering Gallery, and he used me to feature how the Whispering Gallery works. And if you listen carefully, you can hear my daughter in the background responding to my whispers of its 365 steps to the top of the dome. And one last announcement, and that is, I am planning on doing a live show. My current thought is to do it New Year's Day. My thought is to do it at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern, which would be 10 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So pick your time zone, and the place to go will be talkshoe.com. I'll put a specific link on the Amateur Traveler site, but you might want to go there sometime between now and then if you're interested in participating and download the software. You can dial in and ask questions, and so I'm hoping if anyone shows up that we will have an interactive show where people will tell stories, ask questions, and that should be a lot of fun. We'll start the New Year's that way. So join me January 1st on TalkShoe.com for a live episode of The Amateur Traveler, which may or may not be added to the regular show feed. Depends on how it turns out. With that, we'll wrap up this episode of the show. If you have any questions, feel free to call the comment line, 408-8494-POD, or leave me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com, or go to the website, amateurtraveler.com, and leave a comment or post on the discussion boards. Love to hear from you, and as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.